Ezekiel Elliott. And he's got an opening. Elliott off to the races. Can they catch him? No, they can't. Touchdown.
The tie, a three will win it. Sylvester for three. Oh! Oh! With 5.1 to go.
Here's Fields with time in the end zone.
A single season record of 14 set by Vernon Golston in 2000.
8 seconds to go. Kraft with Paolo defending. Now a switch off. He's got Niang on him with three. He better hurry. Puts up the shot. And he hits it with 0.2 seconds to go. Wow.
Inbounds Turner, left side of the backboard. Turner across the timeline, throws it from high on the right.
He hit it just inside of half court.
They go for the ball game. Touchdown! Michael Jenkins on 4th and 1. Would you believe it? Craig Krenzel strikes with 1.5 minutes left. Holy Buckeye!
This is the Bunch of Nuts podcast featuring Dan Smith and Big Cass. Let's get nutty!
Hello and welcome back to a big time episode of the Bunch of Nuts podcast. I'm Dan here with Big Cass, and we have recurring guest. We had him on 2 years ago. Welcome back to the show, TJ Downing. It is a pleasure to have you here today.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys, man. Nothing better than to be talking Buckeye football. Weren't sure if we were going to have it, but as it looks, man, just here in about two short weeks, it's going to be fun.
Oh, I can't wait. I got the internship for Fox Sports, and I'm just waiting for the days to go down. Nothing like getting paid to watch the Buckeyes. I mean,
16 days, man. Yeah. Strap it up, ready to roll.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to – I came up with the clever name of this week's episode, Down in the Trenches with TJ Downing. we're going to talk some O-line and maybe some defensive line, but let's throw it back. 2006 O-line, national championship game. I know, unfortunately, we fell short. Versus the 2020 offensive line. What is the similarities and the differences between the two?
Well, so I guess the first thing that I've heard is that there's a lot of people throwing around a pretty big term here with this 2020 O-line, that they may be the best ever to do it at Ohio State. That's pretty big shoes to fill there, thinking about some of those offensive line. In 06 and 05, the two lines my junior and senior year, two completely different lines. I mean, you look at a guy from 05 and Nick Mangold, he might end up being in Canton in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Doug Daddish actually played left tackle on that line. We go to 2006, the following year, and we shifted Daddish down to center. He ends up making first team All Big Ten, and that's where you see Alex Boone really step into the fold there at left tackle. So that offensive line in 06, it was special to me because it was my senior year. We were number one, and we made that run. And unfortunately, yeah, it didn't end the way that we wanted to. But there were some pretty special guys. I mean, Kirk Barton ended up being a first-team All-American and captain. What Alex was able to do in the NFL with the 49ers, I mean, he was Pro Bowl caliber to me. And that entire offensive line with Joe Staley and Mikey Uhadi, I mean, there were some studs there. You know, and then guys that guys like myself and Steve Rearing and Tim Schaefer at the guard spots, Tim and I came in together, and we kind of battled for that tackle spot back in like 03 and 04. Kirk Barton ultimately won it. And so then they shifted Tim over to guard, and they put me at right guard next to Kirk. We ended up starting 29, 30 games next to each other. And but, you know, Steve Rearing was another guy. I was looking at some of these offensive linemen from this year, big number 71. That's Josh Myers, right? I mean, he's right. A guy who, he's going to be looked at as maybe a contender for the Remington Award. And I saw the number 71, and I saw how big that Myers was, and it instantly reminded me of Steve Rearing. If you remember Rearing out of Lakota, he was like 6'8", 340 pounds. He was a monster out there.
Right.
And typically, you never have a guy that comes in where they say, hey, we need you to lose weight. You know, they typically want to beef guys up or break them down and build them back up. And Rearing was a guy that had to drop a couple LBs before they let him play. But once 71 got out there on the field, he handled his business. We had a great line in 06. this line coming up, led by Harry Miller, man, and Josh Myers in the middle. I mean, Thayer Munford on the outside. There's some players there, man.
What I like about this line is just the continuity, because, I mean, they really lost one guy in the draft, Jonah Jackson. And he was a grad transfer, so I feel like they had time to develop the young guys like Harry Miller and everything. But when you look at the line, I mean, what do you think are going to be the strengths and the weaknesses of this offensive line, just kind of when you eyeball them on paper?
Oh, well, first thing, you better be able to be good at pass protecting. That's the hardest thing to do for an offensive lineman. You're setting backwards. You're letting these defensive ends that are, you know, maybe a little bit lighter nowadays, but very fast coming off the edge, and they get a three-way go. They can go through you, underneath you, or around you with a speed rush. And when you're backing up, the hardest thing to do in a game of football is pass protecting. And so when you got a guy like Justin Fields out there, we talk about, you know, Josh Myers in the middle maybe being a Remington contender. Justin Fields is a Heisman contender. So you better be able to keep this guy upright and keep him clean. So pass protection is going to have to be at a premium. And that all starts with the tackle play. I mean, Thayer Munford, you know, people are going to bring their best guy over top of him. And he's a guy, you know, you throw around some big names in Ohio State history. And I've said this to a couple people, and they look at me kind of cross-eyed. But you look at a guy like him and his size and his freakish ability to move very fast. He reminds me of a young Orlando Pace / Corey Stringer type player. Now, big shoes again to fill, right? You're talking all-time greats. But I think Thayer has those capabilities to tackle.
And it's the number too, number 75. I mean, Pace wore 75 in Ohio State. So,
and I'll give you credit, TJ, too. I remember when we had you on 2 years ago, when Thayer was, you know, a young pup.
He's fighting for the job.
Yeah, he was fighting for the job. And I remember you telling, you know, keep an eye on him. Just looking at, I guess, how far he's come. What do you think has been key in his development? What has he really worked on from your perspective that's really made him into the player he is today?
Well, I'll tell you one of the things. This is more of a sidebar for what I do with my high school broadcasting. And, Josh, you and I have talked a little bit about that. You kind of did the same thing. And I get a lot of opportunities to work with Maslin and their head coach, Nate Moore. And Nate Moore took Thayer Munford in. You know, Nate was down there at Cincinnati LaSalle when Thayer was down there. Nate took the job up at Maslin, and they brought him in to live in their home with him and his wife, Becca. And I think having a guy like Nate in Thayer's corner has been so solid for him, somebody that he can lean on, depend on, be able to talk to about anything. Nate went through the fires down and played his college ball in Dayton. He played big-time ball. He knows what it's like to be in the trenches. He knows the limelight and exposure and the pressure. Again, what we talked about, you're the left tackle. That's like being the field side cornerback, man. You're on an island, and you can get exposed if you're not ready to go every week. So he's had a good foundation, family foundation underneath him, and then the kid's just a hard worker. I mean, you don't get, like 2 years ago, what we talked about, the opportunity to play that early if there's not some type of special potential there. And I think Urban saw that, and I think Coach Day has really tapped into it. And Coach Studd has done a great job down there with that offensive line. But Thayer, I mean, he's got one of the God-given things that coaches can't teach, and that's size, freakish size. But for that size to be able to move like a cat, to be that agile, it's what NFL teams drool over in a left tackle.
Absolutely. Let's flip it to the other side. There's a position battle that's currently going on with a true freshman and Paris Johnson and Nicholas Petitfree. Those two guys are obviously the size is there and they're monsters. Talk about that position battle. And could you see Paris taking that spot?
Well, you know, I got a chance to see sparingly at times Nick play last year. I don't think he was the main guy. He may have gotten a couple starts, but I know he saw action in a majority of the games, I think, last year. I think coming into a season, trying to figure out who's going to be the starter or whatnot, you kind of just lead your hand towards the guy that maybe has some experience. Again, Paris, I believe he was number one on everybody's radar coming out of Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think he was the number one tackle.
A mammoth, a big guy. I think he goes about 6'5", 305 pounds, which I guess isn't jumping off the page when you look at some dudes that are 330, 340. But I think that job goes to Nick, but they're going to probably early, within the first 2 to 3 weeks, they're going to get Paris Johnson into the fold. You know, one of the things that the ideas that we always operated under with Coach Tressel and Coach Jim Bowman was as an offensive line, you want to have a pair and a spare. So you want to have your starting offensive line and then two guys at a given moment, somebody going down in game, two guys that you know, hey, I trust I can put these guys in right now. There's going to be no drop off. They'll be able to get the job done just like the starter did. So regardless, Harris is going to be a guy, even if he doesn't start, hey, you're playing right away, man. So get ready and be ready. Be prepared because as many injuries as we see in Big Ten football down in the trenches with that style of physical play, odds are his number is going to get called.
I mean, who else do you think would, like, see some time? Like, what about a guy like DeJuan Jones or the Hawaiian Enoch Vamahi? I can't even pronounce his name.
I'm not going to try and say it either, man. I'm just going to say Enoch. I mean, I think he's a guy that highly recruited as well, a four-star guy. You look at Max Wary, I think he was a four-star guy too. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned DeJuan Jones, and, hey, we're talking about size. It's great to see him. I believe he wears number 79, and I think he goes roughly about 6'8", 360.
Yeah. They call him Big Thanos.
When you see him out on the field, it's just like, whoa. At the Division I level, there's not somebody really that big that sticks out amongst other 6'5", 300-pounders. But he does. He sticks out off the screen, man. It's cool to see. And I like to see a guy like him get his opportunity. There's probably a lot of people that don't think he'll ever make it or get that start. But you can tell that the young man is just – he's excited to work. He wants to try and drop some weight and just be lean out there, being able to move. Because that's the biggest part when you have running dual-threat quarterbacks and all the talent coming out of the backfield and all the different formations and packages that Coach Day can run, you need linemen that can move as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at the offensive line and the potential guys that's going to play a lot. And the fact that Josh Myers is the shortest one at 6'5", it's just, woof.
Yeah.
That's some size right there.
I was big on him coming out of Miamisburg. And I don't know, if you've gotten to cover some games down in that area, it was kind of out of the way for me. But I always had my eye on him when he's at Miamisburg as, you know, one of the top recruited guys in the state of Ohio. And his size, I wasn't sure if he would fit well at center because you want some more of those compact guys. You don't want a taller guy that has to bend as much. Somebody that can be a little bit more compact and technique savvy and just be able to stay low.
That's what made Jacoby Bourne so good. He's only 5'11", 6 foot tall. And I think, you know, that's in Urban Meyer's offense. That was the ideal center was the Jacoby Bourne. He played outstanding.
Yeah, and, you know, we're talking about some throwback dudes, and we haven't really got a chance to talk about Wyatt Davis yet, American offensive guard. Just thankful that he was allowed to come back because I know there was some confusion there with whether he may have signed with somebody or he thought that the season was going to be canceled. I'm glad that they let the young man come back because him and also Sean Wade, they were put in a tough situation where they felt their hand was forced. They had to do what they had to do.
Yeah.
And Wyatt Davis is a guy that when you talk about playing compact and maybe playing a little bit smaller than your actual frame is, I always think of a guy like LaCharles Bentley. LaCharles Bentley, one of the all-time greatest centers to ever do it. And I studied a lot of film on him when I was coming up through the ranks at Ohio State. And Wyatt reminds me a lot of him because he can compact his body down in his stance and look smaller. And then when that ball snapped and he explodes out of it, the dudes across some of them are just like, watch out, man.
He's probably the toughest offensive lineman we've got on the football team.
And you rarely see, like, offensive line highlights. But last year, I saw plenty of Wyatt Davis highlights of him just throwing guys across the field, just picking guys up and throwing them like a rag doll. And it's going to be crazy to see that this year.
Yeah, his strength is off the charts. And, again, when you talk about – as an offensive lineman, playing compact in your stance, the hardest thing for linemen, and it all goes back to the fundamentals and basics of the game, is being comfortable in your stance. You want to feel like you can get down in your stance and you could do a zone play, you could do a power play, you could do a pass set, you could do whatever you want out of that same stance so that you're not giving away anything to the defense. And Wyatt is able to get so bunched up in that stance. And what I always liked about a bunched-up stance is that when you come out of it, you naturally explode out of it. So the first thing that you're hitting is that defensive lineman across from you, or if it's a linebacker trying to shoot the A or B gap, you're exploding out of that stance, and it just gives a little bit more shock when you're going to hit those guys. And trust me, they feel it, especially when Wyatt Davis is delivering it to them.
Absolutely. Talk about the other guard, Harry Miller. I think it's his job, Harry Miller, highly recruited guy. Do you think he can match the hype and later down the road of Wyatt Davis?
Yeah. You know, I think it was you, Dan, that mentioned he's kind of the only guy they're replacing is Jonah Jackson.
Yeah.
And Harry kind of is that guy. I think for him, his upside is that he's versatile. You know, so we talked about playing with a pair and a spare, having some guys in reserve that need to come in and on a whim. And sometimes what you'll see is maybe the guy is a right guard or a right tackle backup on the 2-deep. But when the right tackle goes down, they don't technically put that guy in. Harry Miller may be a guy that if a tackle goes down, they shuffle him out. Or if Josh Myers went down, they shuffle him back down to center.
Yeah, he's definitely backup center for sure.
Yeah, he's the starting left guard, but he's the swing guy. So everything kind of goes with him and his versatility. And that's something that really will lend itself to him when the NFL opportunity comes knocking. Because, you know, typically – if you start 3 years at Ohio State, you're most likely going to get a shot at the NFL, even if you're only an undrafted guy like myself. And being versatile to the NFL is like the golden thing. That's the golden ticket as an offensive lineman. If you can play guard and tackle, well, you just boosted your odds of making a 53-man.
Look at Michael Jordan. I mean, he's having great success down there in Cincinnati. Thank God.
Your boy Joe Burrow needs it, man. He needs all the protection he can get.
Yeah, he does. And just it pains me to see the struggles that Billy Price is having too. But he'll get it together. He's Billy Price.
You talk about a legend, man. When I think he's got the all-time career starts record at like 51 or 52 for Ohio State.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah,
most ever beat out Luke Fickell.
Yeah. Actually, I used to sit next to him in class. He was a big guy back then too. He was we had a media and like terrorism class or whatever. And the whole time it was just me and like him chiming in just about Call of Duty because like there was like a whole chapter on Call of Duty. But he's a cool dude, Billy.
You give him a couple of those beef green burritos and some chocolate milk, man. He'll be terrorist number one in that class.
he always forgot his pencil. I had to give him my pencil a few times.
You know, it was interesting. I was coaching for my alma mater, Glen Oak, back in 2012, and we had Austin Town Fitch in the Federal League at that time. Billy was a senior there, and he was really a premier defensive end around the state of Ohio. He wasn't even really talked about on the offensive line. He was big number 54, was playing defensive end for Austin Town Fitch. And then all of a sudden, he gets down there, and the coaches, on a whim, they make the right call and the move, and they switch him to center. And look what happens. One of the all-time greatest coaching moves maybe in Ohio State history.
I thought you were about to go, Cass.
No, did I
just blow your mind? With
you
an
did.
All-time
yeah, you did. That you did. Like, you did.
I had to let it sit in for a second for you guys.
Yeah, you blew our minds, man.
I mean, if that doesn't happen.
I can see the smoke coming out of your ears on the outside of those cans.
If that doesn't happen, the Zeke play doesn't happen because he was the one, the key blocks on that play.
There you go, man. Ran right through the heart of Alabama and Oregon and ate up Wisconsin. Yeah. So don't say it was Cardale Jones. It was Billy Price.
Us linemen got to stick together, TJ.
You have to, man. You know, we don't get enough love. We don't get enough credit.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, when you look around the Big Ten, what other teams have offensive lines that you think would pop out to you? Obviously, they're not going to be Ohio State caliber, but –
Well, instantly, the first thing I look at is the team up north. You know, I always want to know what Michigan's doing. And they stole one of our guys. They have Ed Warner coaching up there. Ed Warner was our offensive line coach. And I've seen some more Michigan guys on that offensive line going to the NFL now. I believe the last guy I just saw the other day was on that Detroit Lions line, I believe. Was it Ruiz?
Yeah, Ruiz.
Yes. So that was the Detroit Lions that he's playing with?
I believe so, just because.
So you got Jonah Jackson and Ruiz playing on the same offensive line?
Taylor Decker.
Oh, geez. How about that, man? Ruiz is in for a lot of fun there with those two on the outside of him.
Wait, scratch that. Saints. He plays for the Saints.
Saints, yes. Okay, okay.
Even more Buckeyes.
Hey, Taylor Decker will hold it down for us.
Yes.
But, you know, I look at what Michigan's doing, and Ed Warner's a great coach, a great offensive line coach. He'll bring some life back into them. The one thing that you guys have to realize is that Michigan is a great program. They're a tradition-rich university. They're not going to be bad forever, even though we've been smoking them here for a while. I mean, all the way back, they've only beat us one time, I think, since my sophomore year. We started that run, and we've gone like 15-1 or 16-1 again. It's been too much to even count. I think it is 15-1.
They've beat us 2000, 2003, and 2011.
Yep, so 2011 since 04. 04 was my sophomore year. That was my first start against Michigan. They beat us one time since 04. I mean, that should have the smoke coming out of your ears. Well, especially if you're up there in Michigan. I mean, we're closing that gap to where we're almost tied up in the all-time series. So we've kind of, you know, where they kind of took advantage of us and dominated us back in the early 1900s. We're closing that gap. That's a big thing for us. But understanding, too, that they'll bounce back. Just like we never thought back in the 90s, even though back then I was a Michigan fan, you guys never thought that you'd beat Michigan again. You thought, you know, Coach Cooper, it was just tough. You know, I think it was 2-8-1, and there were some lean years there playing against Michigan. And so it turned its course. We got Tressel. Maybe Harbaugh's not the answer for them. Maybe Coach Warner's not the answer for them. But I think you're always going to have big offensive linemen, good offensive linemen that are going to go to Michigan because of the legacy and the history, just like Wisconsin. Same thing there.
Iowa.
You pretty much know. You look at Iowa, Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan, throw Ohio State on the top of it. If those guys are having pretty tough offensive lines, you know it's going to be a good year for the Big Ten.
And believe it or not, I know they get a lot of crap because, you know, nobody really wants them in the Big Ten. But Rutgers has offensive linemen out there that are playing well in the NFL. I mean, it's the Big Ten. Big Ten is the offensive line conference, in my opinion.
Right. And even if you're one of those offensive or defensive linemen at one of those schools that's been struggling and been on the bottom half of the Big Ten for the last couple of years, NFL coaches are still seeing video of you going against or trying to block Chase Young last year or trying to block, you know, Winovich up at Michigan. So if you're at Maryland or Rutgers or Illinois or Indiana and you're doing good, you know, against those guys, you know, you're still going to get the same shot. As you said, it's still Big Ten football. It's still Division One football. You know, there's talent everywhere at that level.
Who's the defensive line this year that could give Ohio State the most fits?
Well, my biggest concern is week two going over to Penn State. You know, you've got with all that's been going on and all the confusion and uncertainty, practice starts, then practice stops. Now we resume. Now we have a schedule. You know, trying to get guys prepared to go on the road to Happy Valley is not an easy thing to do. I'll tell you, the toughest game, the loudest environment, and the one that just – it kind of took us out of our game plan and our element was Happy Valley. When they pack 110,000 in there, now they're not going to be able to do that now, so it's different. But Happy Valley to me, with the defensive linemen and just the defenses, the linebacking cores that Penn State always has, they've always given us fits. And we've always had a tough time going over to Happy Valley. Whether there's going to be 110,000 with white shirts on, screaming, going nuts, or they social distance and maybe put 6,000 in there. You know, Coach Franklin will have that defense ready to go. And the one thing that Ohio State has to realize, which we knew right away when I played there, nobody is going to play you straight up. No defense is just going to come off the ball straight up at you. They're going to use twists. They're going to use stunts. They're going to use blitzes. They're going to disguise things. They're going to do everything they can to throw you off because they have to. When you're at Ohio State, you have a mindset that you're the best in the country. Playing you straight up is not going to get the job done.
As a guard, what was like the most annoying like blitz package someone would throw at you?
Well, when they used to call it a maca blitz, but really we used to just call it a dick'em blitz.
A dick'em. Because
they would bring linebackers into both A gaps. So okay. And typically they would never bring both of them. They would bring one and drop the other, which they were trying to dick us. So they draw a guard in on one play, and maybe that guy, that linebacker, drops out of the A gap, and there's somebody coming off the edge. So now you're really you're not in a position to be able to get that block now. Mm-hmm. But then the linebacker on the other side comes. So when they would bring those two linebackers up, and it was really tough for me in practice and in 2-a-days, because you know the two linebackers that were walking up in those gaps for me were Bobby Carpenter and AJ Hawk, and throwing an Anthony Schlegel, and it's like, you know, if you can block these guys in camp, I can block anybody in the country. Playing against Minnesota and Michigan State, that's going to be easy.
Oh, yeah. And then your senior year, you had Marcus Freeman and James Laurinaitis. It just didn't get any easier.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, it's interesting you say that about Laurinaitis, man. It was really sad to hear about his dad a couple weeks ago. His dad was super cool, man. I grew up a WWF fan. And I remember when I first cut that mohawk into my hair, I'd come out and game day, I saw James Laurinaitis at the Blackwell. His dad, he was standing down there in the lobby, and he looked at me and he saw my haircut and he just smiled. And he said, "If you're going to wear that thing, you better bring some an attitude with it." And I said, I got you, sir. Noted. I'll make sure I bring that attitude for you today and every week. But James, he was so tough to block when he would come on that A-gap blitz, because he was so athletic. He was so fast, but he was so strong too. I mean, he was the total package as a linebacker. He kind of threw us off when he first came in there. We used to tease him. He was from like Wayzata High School in Minnesota. You know, he's the animal son, and we called him the little animal. We teased him pretty hard, but I'll tell you what, man, he developed into quite a player, and I think to leave the NFL as the Rams' all-time leading tackler, I mean, that says it all right there about that kid.
That's the one, like, kind of crazy thing. I was kind of thinking about this, just a random thought. Like, I have random thoughts throughout the workday, but just, like, when you think about how players, like, throughout in Ohio State develop each other, like, last year this team was going up against Chase Young every day, an absolute monster. Before that, they're going up against Nick Bosa. So, like, you know, the line was getting all this practice, and now the line is probably the strength of this team. So now, and obviously now the defensive line is obviously a little bit down probably this year. And it's going to be crazy. And not down, but I mean, you don't replace Chase Young. You just don't replace a guy like that. It's just going to be cool to see how like a guy like Wyatt Davis is going to impact the guys on the defensive line and probably, you know, pass his like his greatness over to them.
Well, what I'll tell you is Coach Tressel, he used to give us those winner's manuals, and they would have quotes for all different types of things in life. And he used to talk, you know, one of them that we would see, he would say, iron sharpens iron. How many times have you heard that coming through high school and in different sporting events? Iron sharpens iron. And that's what happens at Ohio State, man. I mean, spring ball is difficult because it's just you. When I was there, I was the number one defense in the country every year. So practice was hard. And I didn't like practice, man, going up against some of those guys trying to block Quinn Pitcock and Jay Richardson and guys like that. And so when you get into the season, yeah, it's a little bit of a reprieve. But, you know, Wyatt Davis and Chase Young, guys like that battling against each other, they're just making each other better. And that's all you can ask for as a coaching staff. When you got guys that push each other like that in practice, coaching becomes easy. And it's nice to have guys like that because they just care about getting better. You know, if I want to go against the best guy out there because I want to know where I stand. And afterwards, I need to know, what do I have to do to get better? And if I can get better and compete against this guy, I can compete against anybody in the country.
All I want to know, all I want to see is Tommy Togi versus Wyatt Davis in Bull in the Ring. Strength on strength. Let's get after it.
Yeah, we never had the bull on the ring. We did what was called a hoot and holler, which was basically three linemen on three linemen, a quarterback, running back, and a defensive back. And all I know is anytime those drills went live, man, coaches were free game. Everybody was free game. And they typically ended turning into a full-out war.
That is awesome. I guess I have another one. Just when you look at the defensive lines and around the Big Ten, what defense? Well, we actually kind of talked. What yeah. defense? What defensive line players do you see around the Big Ten potentially being an issue? Like individuals.
You know, it's tough. I mean, for some of the schools with a guy like Michigan State coach Mel Tucker just kind of coming back, you don't know how things are going to get restructured when there's a new mm-hmm. takeover like that. But I know that they've had some pretty good defensive ends. I believe he may be gone now, but it was Golston or one of the defensive ends that they've had there recently at Michigan State was a standout.
Willekes?
Yes. You know, he's a guy that could benefit greatly from Mel Tucker coming in there. Mel was a guy that was a defensive assistant on our 2002 national championship team. And, you know, he's coming in there trying to take over a program that's kind of in shambles right now. So he's a guy that might be able to provide a little spark into him, coached in the NFL. And maybe this is a guy that, you know, could turn into one of your premier defensive ends in all of the Big Ten.
So in practice, say you're on the 2020 Ohio State Buckeyes, what defensive lineman on this team would love to go up against?
Well, the guys that kind of always stuck out to me were the guys that, you know, were this hybrid defensive end, kind of a stand-up linebacker, but he can also get down and rush the quarterback because they're really just trying to utilize his speed. He did that a lot with Bobby Carpenter. We put him down, put his hand in the dirt. He's 260 pounds, and he can run a 4.4, 4.5, and just go around those offensive tackles.
Probably could still run a 4.4, 4.5.
Right, at that weight, and you're going against a guy that's obviously not as athletic as you are in the offensive tackle. And, you know, so I always like to challenge myself against guys like that. And one of the guys that really sticks out to me, I was really hoping to get a chance to see early this year. I was scheduled to do that Pickerington Central Maslin game before COVID had kind of canceled. That was Jack Sawyer. And I can't wait to see what he kind of brings to this defense. I mean, number one recruit. You know, he plays that defensive end spot, but, you know, looks like he could probably stand up and cover if he has to. So if I was on the 2020 team as an offensive guard or an offensive tackle, and I know that they got the number one recruit in the country coming in there as a defensive lineman or a defensive end, I might want to introduce myself to that kid. I'm sure that dude that wears the cowboy hat, Wyatt Davis, I'm sure he won't take too long to introduce himself.
No, not at all.
I guess speaking of Wyatt Davis, I mean, not trying to turn this into a Wyatt Davis show, but could you see, I mean, a lot would have to happen, but could you see him having like an Orlando Pace type season? Maybe if the thing cards fall right, him ending up in New York like Orlando Pace. I know that's very far-fetched. But
yeah, you know, the things that will benefit that or help that out will be Justin Fields putting up astronomical numbers, winning the Heisman Trophy, or even if he's in the hunt for the Heisman Trophy, I think that's what will bring along a guy like Wyatt Davis. You saw that with John Hicks back in the day when Archie Griffin won the Heisman Trophies. And then obviously you mentioned Orlando Pace. Look at who was rushing the ball right behind him. I believe the year before it was Eddie George who won the Heisman Trophy. So those things will help if you have other guys, your weapons on offense, kind of bringing you along with them. Now, the thing that hurts for Wyatt Davis is it's not a premier position. It's offensive guard. It's not sexy. It's not left tackle. It's not center where you're touching the ball every play. And that quarterback center exchange is so crucial. But I think Wyatt Davis, he's a guy that could definitely clean house on all the awards. The Outland, being consensus first team, all Big Ten and all American. And I think I just read a column the other day where if he's named first team all American, he will join only Orlando Pace and Chris Ward as the only multi first team all Americans ever on the offensive line at Ohio State. So there you go. There's some elite company, Orlando Pace style.
So he would get two trees then, right?
No, you know what I think they do, honestly, because I'm still a little disappointed because I didn't get my tree. I finished as a second team All-American. So you got to be first team All-American to get the tree.
That's such a technicality.
You know, and as my buddy Kirk Barton always reminds me, because he's got his tree down there, he said, well, if they had yours next to mine, he goes, I would just make sure I pissed on it every time I walked by. But, I don't think that they give you two. I think maybe they just add an extra plaque underneath it, or they put another little ceremonial Buckeye leaf next to it or something. But to have your that tree down there, that's what, another thing that makes Ohio State so special, is Buckeye Grove. It's just another one of the traditions that makes us, to me, the best program in the country.
Eventually, that grove's going to be a forest. Like
it is.
Yeah. They're going to need to make some more room.
They're going to have to put Justin Fields up this year, Wyatt Davis. Well,
they're building so much stuff there on campus that I hope they never come down there and try and reappropriate those trees, because it seems like every time you come down there, there's a new medical building down there on campus.
Yeah, they took away a bunch of parking. I know that.
So yeah, it's a constant state of construction. I remember just my freshman year, I got to enjoy my area of campus for like 2 weeks. And then they're like, all right, I hope you guys like these basketball courts, because we're tearing them down. And then we got new basketball courts like 2 years later. But it is what it is with the construction.
Yeah, we used to have some fun times out there at the Jesse Owens. You had the J.O. South, the J.O. North. And, I mean, there were some fun times there. And all that stuff has just kind of been cleared out now. I mean, we had Larkins Hall when I was there. You know, and that's all been ripped down, and you get the RPAC, you know.
RPAC's awesome.
Everything is state-of-the-art now, man, and that's what's super cool. And I guess I can say, just like when I was leaving Ohio State, they were building the new Woody Hayes facility. So I guess I could say I left a little bit of something behind, but it would have been kind of cool to enjoy that, because see those locker rooms now and the Woody Hayes Center, they got pool tables in there. It's like a full buffet every day.
Man, I'd probably just go nuts in there. I mean, I know that I go nuts just going in the trophy room. I took Dan in there last year for the first time, and it's just getting into the trophy room, seeing the trophies is just, if you're a recruit and you see Buckeye Grove, the horseshoe, then you take a drive to Woody and just see the trophies, and it's just, that has to win you over.
Coach doesn't really need to say much more after that.
No, I don't think he has to say anything.
Right.
So before we go, let's break down this, you know, the season and your thoughts on the Ohio State's football season this year, and where they end up. And, you know, I'm sure you're just like every other Buckeye fan and other Buckeye, that they're going to win the Natty this year. But your TJ Downing's thoughts on the 2020 Buckeyes and how they end.
Well, I mean, I'm the first person that will tell you, don't go throwing around the national championship thing until you just do the basic things first, which is win the Big Ten. You win the Big Ten, you're going to put yourself in a shot to compete for the national championship. And however those chips fall, they may. I am a huge proponent of the playoff system. I think they should go a little bit larger and maybe do the top eight. You can still keep it all fair with all your money. You can still have your Orange, Rose, Sugar, and Fiesta. Play those games with the top eight, have your two national semis, and then have your national championship game that rotates between those other four bowl games. I think that you win the Big Ten, you're going to qualify for that. I don't see a whole lot of teams that are going to be able to stack up against Ohio State. Again, my biggest concern would be Penn State and going over there week two, having to be able to fire on all cylinders right away. That's where I think we benefit most from having Coach Ryan Day. He seems like the most dialed-in, laser-focused coach in the country. There's a lot of great coaches out there. You know Dabo's going to be there at the end of the year. You know Saban's going to be there at the end of the year. But I don't think that those guys, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to call any shots at any of those guys being older or saying it's a youth or a style or whatever, but you just see something different in Ryan Day's eye. And especially after all that happened this preseason with almost losing this thing, and you heard him every day saying, I'm fighting for my guys. We want football. I'm fighting for my guys. And I think Coach Day is going to have these guys really focused and dialed in amidst all this stuff going on. And I think that's what carries him over in Happy Valley. I don't see anybody in the Big Ten beating them. I see them running through it all the way until the Michigan game. Now, again, throw it out. You can throw records out in the Michigan game.
Yeah.
Whether it's COVID season or not, you know, it's that game is different. But I think we get them again this year. I think what Justin Fields and those wide receivers bring to the table, along with that defense, I don't see anybody beating us. Now, get into the college football playoff, and it's a total crapshoot, but at least you got that chance. And that's all. And that's all you can ask for. Make the top four, let the chips fall where they may.
Absolutely.
I agree. I mean, as long as we win the big, like, you got to win the Big Ten first, and I think it's imperative, obviously. And I honestly want, as a fan, to get another hat. I have the three Big Ten championship hats. I want a four-peat.
Yeah. I do too. Yeah. I was pulling out some of my old hats the other day. I was thinking about wearing one. It was the Alamo Bowl championship from 2004. I didn't know if anybody would pick up on it, though. It's not even the MasterCard Alamo Bowl now. Once your bowl game changes sponsors, it's like you can't even wear the hat anymore.
TJ, we talk a lot and everything. Thank you for coming on again, and we'll have to get you back on again, like always. And good luck on your football games this weekend. And I'm headed up to Mount Vernon to do Canal versus Mount Vernon tomorrow night, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, that's Canal Winchester.
Yeah.
In Mount Vernon? Yeah, yep. I believe I have one of the teams that we may be covering in my area is going to be seeing the winner of that game. So, it's fun.
I'll have to give you pointers.
Yeah, hey, man, you talk about playoffs in college football and playoffs with high school football starting. Man, how cool is it that, I like what they're doing right now.
I do too.
I mean, everybody gets in. Sometimes you don't want to see an 0-6 squad in there, but we got an 0-6 Alliance team up in our area that they could beat somebody. They got good players. The way the season was.
The short. Aviators?
The Aviators, man. They might shock
you. That is so funny you mentioned that. My buddies, I'm from New Jersey. I am boys with everyone from Alliance. Literally, my buddy, he coaches their eighth grade team. That is hilarious you mentioned that. I'm rooting for the Aviators.
Yeah, but I mean really though, Josh, I like it. You got some buys in there. Some of these teams get buys. Yeah. So it puts more juice on having a good first part of the season. There's 664 teams that are gonna get to play playoff football this weekend. Man, it's gonna be pretty fun.
Yeah, and my alma mater, Bern Eugene, last week won their first league title since 1994, and they play Bishop Rosecrans tomorrow night, and they already beat them 56-14, but obviously everybody knows anything can happen, and they have a chance to win their first playoff game in school history, so I'm really rooting for the Bern Eugene Rockets this week.
Nice, man. Go Bern Eugene.
Yep. Well, thank you again, and it was great to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you so much for coming on, TJ. And as we wrap up the show, as always, go Bucks.
Go Bucks, man.
Yeah, great interview like always. Now, let's get into our stupid picks of the week.
Yes. My favorite segment, the picks of the week. And I'm not trying to be cocky over here, but I call Tulsa beating UCF, all right? I think we did go 500 exactly, though. I think we both went. Yeah, I tallied them up. Oh, and I have it right here. Let me pull up the graphic of our picks.
Hey, my Jacksonville State over Florida State looked good for a while.
It was close. Like it was a good call. Just poor execution by Jacksonville State. And as I pull up the picture here, sweet potato. No, I have. Finding it. Oh, here we go. Cool. So yeah, last week we both had Florida. We both got the Texas game wrong. We got the Auburn game wrong. We got the Bama game. I got the Tulsa game, and then you got the Jacksonville State wrong. But those were the dumb picks. So like those, if you get right, those are bonus points.
Right. All right. Let's go in. Dive right in. High noon. Florida at Texas A&M. Florida is a 6.5-point favorite. I'm taking Florida all the way with the points. Even though their defense has got to get a little bit better, and they need to find someone other than Kyle Pitts to catch the football.
So I challenged Texas A&M last week. We challenged them on this podcast, actually.
Yeah.
We said that they're overrated, and they are overrated. But I'm looking at this game. Texas A&M is only a 7.5 point, well, 6.5 point underdog. It is at home. I'm going to go with A&M. I think Florida seems vulnerable. They really do. Like, that defense doesn't seem great. South Carolina and Ole Miss are kind of at the bottom barrel of the SEC. Texas A&M, they just played Bama. So it's like swinging a bat with the donut on it. Like it's like your warm-up swing's Bama, and then your real game this week's Florida. So I'm going to go with A&M at home. I think they're going to be prepared after playing Bama last week.
Yeah, I could see that. The next game, high noon, Virginia Tech at North Carolina. I can't believe North Carolina is ranked 8th in the country.
You know what, too? This is a sneaky good game. This is honestly, I was looking at the schedule. I'm like, this might be one of the best games of the weekend.
Yeah. UNC is a 5-point favorite, but give me the Hokies. Every time it seems like an AC team gets hyped up like a North Carolina does this year, they kind of fall flat. Give me the Hokies.
I think North Carolina is the real deal. They had a problem because they had a few weeks off just because of COVID and all that. And Boston College is a really good team, I think. Jeff Hafley has them rolling if you watch the game. They got cheated out, by the way, last week on the onside. That's a whole different story. But I think North Carolina is a very good team. I got them pulling off the victory on the road here.
All right. Tennessee at Georgia. Georgia looked really impressive. Still shaky on offense, but that defense is legit. And I think Tennessee's going to have a lot of problems. Give me Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia. It's just Tennessee's not there yet. That's all it is.
All right. Before we get to the big one, the one that you want to have fun with on Twitter, Texas and Oklahoma, Red River. This could be a sneaky good game just because both teams are desperate in need for a win, but more Oklahoma than Texas. But Texas hasn't beat Oklahoma since 2018.
This is tough.
Give me the Sooners. 2.5 points, though. Over under, how many points are scored in this game, though?
So the over is 73.
Ugh.
That's ridiculous. I got Texas. I think Oklahoma is in shambles. Oklahoma season's done. They're done.
Over.
There's no shot at the playoff for them.
But no Texas way to ruin Texas this season.
I agree. Texas, they're on life support. Like there is life support. There's still a chance, I guess, if they win out and some stuff falls their way, they could maybe get in. But it starts today. They are, I think, the number one scoring offense in college football. I guess give me Texas, but I'm not loving that pick. I would like to see Oklahoma win. I'm pulling for Oklahoma, but I think Texas will.
All right. Number 7, Miami at number 1, Clemson, 7:30.
Go with the U. If I had like the seagull or whatever the albatross, whatever their mascot is, if I had a helmet, like a headpiece like Lee Corso, I'd be putting it on right now. I've been hyping this game up for months. I got money on the Miami money line. I know they're a 14-point underdog. This is going to be the closest ACC game that Clemson has played in years. I'm telling you, I don't know if Miami's going to win, but I think they are. Something's telling me that the U is going to win, and I love how you knew I was going to be hyping this game up because they have a quarterback. They have a tight end. They have some good running backs. They have a great defense. Well, pretty good defense. Manny Diaz is a defensive coach. I love Miami in this one. And I believe – oh, it's at Clemson, though, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. Doesn't matter. Miami wins by a field goal.
I'm going with Clemson, but Trevor Lawrence needs to find – who's he going to throw to? Can't throw it to Etienne and Rodgers all the time.
You can't throw in the turnover chain defense.
This is a wake up call. This will be a wake up call for the Clemson Tigers. Their defense is pretty good though. Like always, Brent Venables will dial up some things. But that offense has got, they played the Citadel, Virginia, and who else have they played?
Citadel, Virginia, Wake Forest. Wait,
okay. Yeah, they've scored a lot of points against them, but this game will make or break Clemson's season right here.
I'm telling you, Miami is a good team. Like, they have a quarterback now. Like, they honestly have a top quarterback in the country. They have a top 10 quarterback. If you have a top 10 quarterback, a matchup nightmare in Brevin Jordan, their receivers are solid. Their running backs, they have that nice little duo. I think they have Knight in the former OSU recruit. They can definitely, you know, score points offensively. Defensively, I think they're pretty good too. It's really going to be a good game. I don't think people are giving their respect to Miami that they deserve. And maybe Tate Martell will score a touchdown. Maybe he'll sneak in the game. I don't know. But
Tate Martell opted out.
I know. I'm kidding. He's but I'm on the U this week, man. I would love to see Miami pull this off.
Yeah.
And I got like $15 on this game. $15 to win, it's like 120. So we'll see, man. I'm excited.
All right, stupid picks of the week, the bonus point games. I'm going Kansas State at TCU just because they're the two teams that have knocked off Texas and Oklahoma first. Well, Kansas State, you know, I don't Iowa State plays Texas Tech, whoop-de-doo-dah day. But I'm kind of curious about this matchup. A lot of purple, obviously. Give me TCU. This is my stupid pick. TCU knocks off Kansas State.
My stupid pick for the week? I like that one, Kat. I'm going to go with right at the same time because I think at the 4 o'clock slot, there really isn't a lot going on, unfortunately. You got the Georgia-Tennessee game. I feel like that's going to get out of hand, though.
Even the 3:30 games don't look impressive.
No. This one, I think, has a lot of potential, though. It's going to be a close one for sure. Pittsburgh-Boston College. Ooh. It really doesn't have any implications, but it's just interesting because Pittsburgh's looking to take really the next step. Boston College, they got something special going on with Jeff Hafley. That intrigues me. And they're both – Pittsburgh's 3-1. Boston College is 2-1. Both solid teams. But this is definitely a make-or-break game for them. You know, one of these teams, they're going to, you know, probably position themselves nicely in the ACC race. And the other one's going to fall off. So I got Pittsburgh winning this one. I think they're a pretty darn good football team, to be honest. And they're going to go to 4-1. But I think Boston College and Hafley – we'll put up a good fight.
Yes, I'm curious to watch both those games, honestly. So that wraps it up, unless you want to do NFL, which I don't want to do NFL because the Titans are stupid and they have to play on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I NFL, I'm just done with right now. The Broncos are just in shambles.
They play it Monday at 5.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, a guy at work, and I'm going to end on this, predicted the Bengals to beat the Ravens, and I told him he was high.
I might put that bet in. I've been big on Bovada lately, folks. If you're wondering if I've suffered a crippling gambling addiction, I have not. My friends group chat, we all downloaded Bovada, and we've been big this week on just betting random games. I might put that in now just because that guy said that. That would be funny if the Bengals pulled it
off. I'm trying to look up the spread. Lamar Jackson did miss practice today.
Uh-oh. Trace McSorley time. That's a new trend, by the way. If you have heard – No, it's Trace McSorley. It's, the kids are loving it. It's on TikTok these days. Like, it's like, it's like the whole premise of the joke is like, it's like, oh, our quarterback went down, or like, oh, we just made a big trade. We got a big time quarterback, and it's like Trace McSorley. Like, you just got to watch it. That's, it's a good TikTok theme.
By the way, the Bears suck. They're down 13-0.
Yep.
They're the worst. They're the worst undefeated team.
Yeah, they're not good. Well, no, they lost. They lost to the Colts last week. Which means, by the way, as we kind of get near the election, fun fact, the winner of that game the last 4 years has decided the outcome of the election. So if the Colts win, the Republicans win. If the Bears win, the Democrats win. Colts won. So might be good or bad, depending on what side of the aisle you're on. Just that's a random stat. As we wrap up the show here this week, number one, fill out your ballots and go vote.
Already did.
Good. Number two, like always, go Bucks.
And thank you, TJ Downing, for coming on again. And go Bucks.